I have watched the silent killer of pornography disrupt men and women and marriages and home lives. And it's why I love partnering with Covenant Eyes. They're not just a partner in this podcast. I personally use them as a shield against the nonsense of our day. And they have generously offered 30 days free to use this technology as a shield against the onslaught of pornography in our lives. You can get this 30 days for free by going to covenanteyes.com/overcomers. I pray that you would seriously take advantage of this opportunity. Hey guys, thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Overcomers. I wanted to invite you here. I wanted to extend an invitation for you to join me and several others at the Acts 29 conference this coming October in Dallas. So Acts 29 is a church planting organization. We plant churches all over the world, and we've got our conference coming in this October in Dallas. I'll be speaking alongside a great lineup of preachers that you don't want to miss. J.D. Greer will be there, Joby Martin, Steve Bang Lee, and more. The Acts 29 conference, really what our heart is we want to equip and encourage church planners, pastors, and leaders to be faithful leaders in today's rapidly changing culture. We'll be talking about how the gospel provides better answers than the culture to some of the hot topics of our day, including gender, sexuality, power, and more. I would love to see you there. If you want to register, you can go to acts29.com/conference. If you're an Overcomers listener, you're going to receive $20 off registration. You just have to use the code Overcomers in all caps anytime before October 1st. That's acts29.com/conference. Join us there. Eager to see you. Hey, welcome to this episode of The Overcomers. I've got three friends with me today. All three served faithfully, two in the Marines, one in the Army. All three did time overseas. We're just going to have a conversation about faith, veterans, healing, kind of overcoming, if you will, life in the military, and then transitioning out of the military. And I think it's going to be helpful. So why don't we start like this? Why don't you just kind of introduce yourself? Give me what branch, give me maybe years of service, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. I guess I'll start. Zach Brown. I joined the Army in March of 2001, right before September 11th. And then my career went through 2009. So I did 8 years total in the military, and then I did some contract work after that for the State Department, and then I went straight into law enforcement for another 11 years after that. So
that's good. All right, Casey Brown, Marine Corps, joined in 08, got out in 2013. I was a dual MOS. I was a 6323 and aviation electrician, and then I was also a marksmanship coach out on the range and two deployments to Afghanistan.
Okay. Man, I need marksmanship coach. I might need to spend some time with you.
Yeah,
let's do it. Pistol or rifle?
Both.
See, I need help with the pistol. I'm pretty good with the rifle.
Expert on both.
Pretty pathetic with a pistol, but it's fun. We can grow.
PJ Crotable, Marine Corps. I signed up the week after September 11th. A couple tours in Iraq. Kind of needs of the Corps. Ran a machine gun team for a little while. Was a combat motorcycle operator. Original MOS was a 5811. It was a field MP. So got to do a lot of different things, and got out, started a company here in Flower Mound, did that for a while, and now we're heads up seeing what's next.
Okay. I love that. Love that. All three of these guys are in a group of guys I meet with on Thursday nights. We've been meeting for several months now, and it's been incredible. It's like, I was like, these are the guys I want to have this conversation with. And so let's talk a little bit about the role of faith in your life. You can you know, take this and like church background growing up, like how your faith maybe worked when you were in Iraq or Afghanistan. And you can pull us into the like present if you want. I know that's, I just asked you to tell your life story.
Yeah,
faith.
Yeah.
And so why don't we do this? Why don't we do, like church background growing up and just give me that kind of quick, those quick hits.
So I grew up a Church of Christ, family. My grandmother cleaned the Church of Christ church in Rising Fun, Georgia. So, I've been in the Church of Christ my whole church career, if you want to call it that, until the military. And then, after that, a chaplain found me and pulled me into the waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning and reading the Bible with him. So okay. That's really what re-kicked my, and that happened in Iraq in 2002. He really re-kicked my faith, got me reading the Bible again and doing quiet time with the Lord. And
okay.
That's what rekindled the love for Jesus with me.
So you had a relationship with Jesus growing up, or was it just kind of you went to church?
I would say it was a forced relationship with Jesus.
Forced relationship.
You know,
you two will be friends.
Yes.
Okay, Mom.
We had to sing the hymnals, you know, Church of Christ. Right. Not about music. It's all about singing out of the hymnal and coloring in the pews and going to Wednesday night class with the puppets and all that kind of stuff. And
Puppet ministry, bro. I hadn't heard anybody mention puppet ministry in a long time.
But, you know, I really didn't, you know, I had a pretty tough childhood, so therefore church was just a check in the box kind of thing. We had to go on Sunday, we had to go on Wednesday, and I got to where it was. I really didn't look forward to getting up on Sunday morning to go. I didn't really have a relationship. It was just a check in the box. My whole family did it. You know, Mom would hit me because I was falling asleep in the pew, coloring on the back of the welcome here cards. Yeah. So that was really my relationship then.
Okay.
But I would say it rekindled in Iraq, actually, is when it rekindled for me. So
I love that.
100%. Yeah.
All right. Casey? All
right. Yeah. I mean, same, grew up Lutheran, going to church every Sunday, every Wednesday. I went to, you know, Bible summer camps. I went to a church horse camp even when I was young.
Let's go.
But the relationship wasn't there for me. It was just kind of like Zach said, kind of like a check in the box. I remember just being in church and just sitting back, looking around, like, what if these rafters fell down? Like, what if those lights came down? And just like playing things in my head instead of listening to the message. So I really didn't have that relationship. I was going there, I think, kind of in my head, even as a young adult, kind of just trying to be what I thought I was supposed to be. And recently that changed. Within the past year or two, I've had that closer connection with God, that relationship with God, where I've really let him into my life and I've really kind of let him take control of things that I thought that I had to be in control of, and real reason. So I'm kind of in this room, in this group, I'm probably the infant in my walk with Jesus and God, but it's just so exciting to watch it grow.
Yeah. I love it. That's good.
Yeah, PJ. pretty similar. I mean, similar story. I grew up right here in town in a Nazarene church, and we were there every time the door was opened, and many times we unlocked it, you know, and went in. We were there three or four times a week. Very involved, but kind of like what Zach, you know, mentioned, it was more, what I took from it, it was more like doing or not doing, you know, being this good person that, you know, over years kind of almost is like, it's really unachievable.
Yeah.
It's like, man, when am I going to get there? You know, I've been doing this for 30 years, 40 years. So it was just kind of like this expectation that I had that was almost, time to kind of pass over, give up on. How are you ever going to do everything you should and not do what you shouldn't? And, you know, similar to you, like in the past, I'd say year, you know, maybe even closer than that, just in this discovery of like the relational end. And it's not so much about kind of trying to hit the dot, you know, finding freedom. There's a lot more freedom than what I thought. I'm not having to do this or not do that.
Yeah.
You know, there's actually freedom there.
No doubt. It's interesting, like all three of you, I think we've talked about this quite a bit on Thursday nights, and I try to preach to it all the time. There's there's this really terrible kind of understanding of what the faith is that it's just like, hey, be a good man.
Right.
Yeah.
Be a good man. But that, like, where are the scales? Am I ever? Am I? And so I'm always trying to deconstruct that, like, God's not asking you to be a good man.
Right.
He's asking you to surrender to his lordship and walk in a love relationship with him.
Yeah.
And I find so many men in particular, this is the thing, like, I'm going to go to church because I want to be a good man. And then you're just going to run out of gas, man. It's just not without the Spirit's power, without a relationship with God, without that kind of daily interaction with him. Like, one of the ways I've said it for 20 years is, like, church is a lame hobby. I just think you should buy a boat and get out on the lake. I just think just going to church because you're supposed to go to, you think you're supposed to go to church to be good. I just think it's exhausting, man.
You're always talking about, you know, it's okay not to be okay. And this is welcome here. You know, that's so true.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times we package in and don't speak
especially
our struggles.
Especially guys, men in particular, you know, especially, you know, you said it the other day, if we don't take care of the little boy that was hurt when we were, that little boy grows up into a man.
Yeah, but he's still a little boy.
He's still a little boy. He's still fighting those traumas. And that's a lot of what brings guys to church. It's just getting them to realize why you're there, what the meaning of it is.
We deal with the same stuff. It's just packaged differently. You know?
100%. So, yeah. And I would always like hear things. I hear people say, like, God speaks to me and I hear God and I'm like, I'd be in church. Like, when am I going to get,
when do I get,
like,
yeah.
Like, is he ever going to, like, I'm coming here. Like you said, I've been doing this for so long. I've been coming to church. I'm checking the boxes. When's he going to speak directly to me? And I think it's just kind of like you said, just that freedom, once the discovery, and then you start opening things that where God probably has been speaking to me and I just wasn't listening in the way I was supposed to.
Or you get that buddy going, hey, that was God talking to you right there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that probably was. Yeah.
What do you think? Military life is both gold and shadow, right? They teach you things that for the rest of your life, you're glad somebody taught you.
Right.
Whether that's discipline or a certain life skill or a certain, but I also know there's shadow involved in that too. Like I read a book called On Combat, which talked about training modalities.
Lieutenant Colonel.
Post World War II, where the firing rate was like painfully low. And so the military then created new training modalities to try to, in essence, psychologically separate the mind from the heart.
Right.
So that you would pull that trigger when it was time to pull that trigger.
It's the first thing they do in basic training is the whole meaning for basic training is to tear you down and get you to that point where you can separate, you know, this is painful to, I got to get the mission done. So you got to deconstruct yourself real quick in the military. I found in basic training, sometimes it's hard on people and they don't make it and can't make it. And I've seen, you know, I thrived in basic training because my life was already hard.
Yeah.
Shoot, it was easy going to basic training. Someone tell me when to get up and get in line and shine your boots. And
so was that for you, was it the disciplined aspect of it that you would call gold? I think that's going to be my question for you.
I don't know if it's a discipline thing for me. To me, it was a structure.
Okay.
I would say structure.
For sure.
I wasn't a bad kid. I had a hard childhood. I ran away when I was 8 years old because my mother was not as loving as a mom should be. So I think I was fighting a lot of, and looking for someone to put some effort into me.
Sure.
And I realized real quick in basic training, if you do good stuff, man, they put me in charge of the team. I mean, I was the only guy in my basic training that, I was the class leader the whole time we were in basic training. They would fire me, and 2 hours later, Brown, you're back in charge.
Yeah.
That gave me a purpose. Like, I woke up, like, let's get these guys in line, blah, 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 blah. So, fighting that and finding your calling or whatever in the military, that's where I found out. Like, I never wanted to join the military to go kill commies. That's not what it was for me, you know. And if someone ever answers that question, that guy's a psychopath. You know what I mean?
I definitely think that's the gold in the military, just having a sense of purpose. Every single occupation that you have in the military all has the same purpose, to save lives and to defend the country. So it's very easy when you're going in there to feel that. And maybe sometimes even when you're in, you don't feel it. I didn't necessarily feel it as much when I was in until I didn't have it.
Yeah.
Until I became a veteran.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is this? Something's missing here.
Yeah.
And it was that purpose. Now, the shadow to that, I think, kind of what we've talked about before and what starts in basic training is that desensitization of these other emotions that you don't need to be a good warfighter.
Yeah.
All those, the happiness, you don't need to feel sadness, you don't need to feel fear even. And it makes for a great warfighter.
Yeah.
It definitely does if you're able to disconnect the two and be desensitized, but it makes for a very, very awful veteran and a very awful
husband or father. Or
yeah. Well, and that was the thing about when I'd gone up to Edmond, Oklahoma, and it was a jiu-jitsu camp. And we were talking about competing, and I was talking about my first competition and how I had that adrenaline dump. And I literally forgot my progression. I mean, I just repped it and repped it and repped it. And then I've got the guy in side control and I forgot what to do. And so they're like, oh, you got to read On Combat. And what On Combat did for me is made me go, oh my gosh, they've done this to these men that are sitting out in front of me on Sunday. They've done this to these men that I know and walk with. And it helps me understand, oh man, like, of course you're not in tune with your heart. Of course your marriage is struggling. Of course you're fighting all the time of course you're having a hard time connecting at an emotional level.
Right.
You were literally systematically broken there on purpose for this goal.
Right.
And that book for me is, I mean, certainly not a Christian book. I mean, though I think the guy that wrote Grossman. It is a strong believer.
Yeah. He's a huge believer.
Yeah, I can tell. He's quoting the Bible quite a bit in that book. So
he's got a bunch of books.
I mean, On Killing, On Combat. If I find you and I love it, I just start reading everything you wrote. Yeah. So
I mean, and that's such a huge benefit that we have in various trainings that we have spouses going to or family members, parents of veterans. And we teach them military culture. That's really what the training is. And it breaks down a lot of that where you're wired a different way now. You go through all this training and you don't get resensitized when you leave the military. And it helps spouses understand why their veteran is the way they are. It helps mothers and fathers know why they look different coming back from deployment. So the more that you just understand the culture, the more you're able to relate to it.
Yeah. That discipline was definitely something I loved about the military, was good at. But on the flip side of that, it's taken about 20 years of learning till recently that you can't white knuckle, like on the religion side of it.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh man, you know, so that's kind of the double-edged sword for me.
For sure. Like discipline, certainly there's a role of discipline in faith, but you're not going to, nobody's going to white knuckle discipline intimacy.
Right.
That's just not the way it works. So that's a good word. And if you're watching, one of the things I was hoping to pull from this is if you have a son or a daughter or a husband or a friend who's a veteran, who's really struggling, I think some of the threads we're pulling on right now is one, there's this deep sense of purpose in the military where the guy just knows he's part of a brotherhood or part of a family, a unit, that there's a legitimate purpose and we're here for that purpose. And then transitioning out, that's kind of gone. And the other thing is this separation of head and heart, where I'm not sure most veterans actually know that's what's happening. I just think they get back and they're like, well, crap, life's not working. My wife's always upset and I'm not sure why she's upset, or I'm having a hard time connecting in my church with a friend group and I'm not sure why. And then what ends up happening, at least in my purview, you guys are the subject matter experts, is that brother, and I'm going to speak mainly about brothers and men. It's what I know. It's what we are, tend to separate, then isolate. And I think that's where a lot of the really dark, bad things start happening. Speak a little bit to that isolation, especially upon return or upon exit from military.
I mean, I'll kick it off. When we got back from Iraq the first time, there was you have a choice to go talk to somebody or go home. And I think a lot of it was, we don't want to talk when we get back. We just want to go home. And some of us didn't have a home to go to, blah, whatever situation is. But when you get out of the military, it's just like one day that that guy's not there to tell you to get up, or that guy's not, hey, let's go to the mess hall, or it's what, it's just the purpose that you had to live every day, especially in combat. You have a mission that's, it's specifically, hey, this is the mission for this, this deal. These are the check boxes. Execute. And when you get out, that's gone. It's like,
yeah, there's no after action review.
Yeah, there's no after action review.
So immediate, like the transition upon transition, like there goes your team. There goes a lot of times your purpose. And
well, with military, you may have a guy from North Carolina that was, or West Virginia, and then another guy from California, and but you're all there together for those 18 months or whatever you are on deployment. They're a little bit shorter now, I think, but those guys are right next to you in the tent or in the Humvee or sleeping on top of the Humvee, and then all of a sudden after deployment, that guy's back in Los Angeles, and that guy's back in West Virginia, and you know, the separation from all those guys that you know, I have this Forrest Gump quote when Bubba Gump and him are sitting in Vietnam and it's raining, and he says, you know, lean your back against my back, that way we ain't got to sleep with our heads in the mud.
Yeah.
That's, you know, if I could put that on a t-shirt, but that's what it feels like when you come back, is like you don't have anybody to put your head against, so you don't have to sleep with your head in the mud.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I see it just as like the purpose in the military being, so much of it is surviving.
Yeah.
So much of it is survivability. And when you get out and you look at what does surviving look like as a veteran, and you look at a hierarchy of needs, food, shelter, and once you get those things, you have a job that can provide you, you get the, you know, the mortgage paid for, you get food on the plates for your family. That's kind of, you're still in survival mode, and then you get complacent, and that's as far as you go, because you're doing what you have to do. You're checking those boxes for survival, but there's no need for you to get into a community of people. There's no need for you to walk amongst, you know, really good friendships with people, because that has nothing to do with survivability. And it's very, very hard to get your brain past that point of there's more to that hierarchy pyramid than just the bottom necessities that you need. But once you do, I know for me, that was the biggest part. My transition out of the military looked very smooth on the surface. I was able to get a house within 6 months. I was able to, my military occupation translated very well to civilian side. So I was able to get employed. But the internal side, the mental and emotional side, that was extremely rough.
Yeah.
But that's where that growth comes from. That's the post-traumatic growth, is all in the friendships and in the community that I didn't know I needed to address, because I didn't even identify it.
So you could feel something was off, but that wasn't the solution your mind went to. I need to connect with some brothers again.
Right. And in my mind, it was unbeknownst to me. I didn't know that there was a problem until it slapped me in the face. And I was like, okay. Because I was still with so much of my logical side of my brain, if there's not a problem, how can I find a solution?
Yeah.
So once I did address it, I identified it, then I could try to find the solution. And that solution for me was to find community, was to find other people who have gone through it. And getting back to the isolation point, that's what it's all about, is not being isolated in your thoughts, not being isolated in your situation that you're in, the concerns that you're going through. When you know that there's other people around you that are dealing with the same issues, it's so much easier to then find solutions and be vulnerable with those folks.
And that's a whole other thing in and of itself. It's just plugging in.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times we'll show up and, you know, we may look angry or crazy or say something direct or be transactional, whatever you want to call it. And people will be like, oh, wow, whoa. You know, and it makes it tough. And that's a lot of times like, that's not who we are. That's just how we are, you know, on the other side of that. So plugging in is super important, but
we've talked about this. Talk a little bit about because I've honestly in my head wrestled with this as we've gotten to know each other. Like community, let's just put it in parentheses, with a group of dads in the suburbs who they don't, most of them don't even necessarily know what real connection and belonging means.
Yeah.
But you brothers, and we've talked about this, that y'all's community, you know, on the ground was, it was blood, a brotherhood born of blood and sacrifice.
Right.
With a single-minded purpose. And then you get back here and maybe you go to a home group at the church and they're wanting to talk about kids' sports and the Cowboys quarterback. And without without kind of an aggressive kingdom mindset that says, no, we're pushing back darkness. We're in a war, and we need to have a wartime mentality as part of the community. How difficult is it to connect?
It's tough to come off of a brotherhood and try to transition with the expectation that you have and you've developed as far as brotherhood goes and transition into that small group, you know, of guys that, you know, it's a lot of small talk. I like to get in and that's what we've been bred to do.
Yeah.
You know, especially military, we got our objectives. Let's go. You know,
well, it's also in the military, you also got hierarchy and rank.
Yeah.
And so when you get to your unit, you're in a squad, there's a squad leader, squad's in the platoon, there's a platoon leader. There's always somebody there that's, you know, hey, where's Brown at? You know, why is he not here at PT? When you get home, if you were the squad leader, you're used to having those five guys that you're responsible for and standing up for those guys. Well, now you're, you know, it doesn't progress over into the neighborhood, you know, gym across the street, you know. You
don't fit into the small group jig or the church.
Yeah.
You know, jig a lot of times.
Yeah. Yeah. My kind of sense of community and what I've just come to see, and I think it does go back to like the brotherhood that we had when we were in the military. I think just in my perspective, I think a lot of that bond, not necessarily was what we went through together, but it was the mission.
Yeah.
That's what really brought us together. And I think that out here as a veteran and just meeting other civilians and friends that I have now, that if our missions aren't aligned, if our aim isn't the same, that's where we start to fall apart. And that's where we stay very surface level. And I have friends that I've had for 6, 8, 10 years as a veteran. And I was just asked the other day, oh, well, what church do they go to? And I was like, I don't even know. I don't even know if they're a believer. Like, that's how surface level. And they responded like, how do you not know that your friends don't go to church? And that got me thinking, like, the conversations I'm having are on such a surface level because we're just in the same, like our kids go to the same school or they play on the same football team. And it's not, we don't have that general, that same aim. We don't have that same vision. And I know more about some of these guys in our past few months than I do about guys that I've known for 10 years.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing about veterans needing to be around other veterans in regards to healing, I think, some of the traumas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's the only way, but certainly it's helpful because it's, you know, sometimes the guys on Thursday night, y'all start talking a language. I don't even know what you're talking about. I'm just listening.
Yeah.
And then maybe I'll Google after you leave or I'll pull a little aside. I was like, hey, that was like 40 abbreviations in that 4 minute. And so catch me up. What was that? And so Big Will will be my
line you out.
Translator.
Yeah.
Like, okay, it's this or that. Men, let me start by talking to you. We are called to lead and to love and to serve our wives, our kids, in our churches. And the reality is that we are in a battle. And one of the most subversive, awful weapons that the enemy has formed against us is the weapon of pornography. Maybe you're hearing me say these things and you're not a man at all. You're a woman. And the data is showing that women are struggling more and more with pornography. Also, this is one of those attacks that no longer is seen male or female, old or young. We will not drift towards holiness. We must fight for it. Too much is at stake. If you go to covenanteyes.com, you can use the promo code OVERCOMERS, and that gets you 30 free days to put this on your phone, to put this on your computer, to put this on your devices, that you might see the help that God has given you in these days against this weapon for the good of your own soul, the good of your family, the good of your community, and the good of your church. Visit covenanteyes.com/overcomers. There are things you have to do I think the Bible gives permission for and gives examples of in battle. I have met several guys now who have not really been able to get over what they did and can't imagine that God would be okay with them, would still move towards them, would still want them. Did anybody here wrestle with any of those kind of things where, like, in the line of duty, it's war. It's not murder. It's war, but man, war is awful.
Oh, yeah.
And anyone who thinks it's not, it's just watch too many movies and watch too many video games. Any wrestle with that where you get back and there's a moment, there's a person, there's a memory that really made you feel more distant from God or made you feel more like, oh man, I'm not sure the Lord's grace will forgive that or none. If there's none, then that's fine. I mean,
I've been pretty lucky, I think. I mean, just blessed, lucky, hopefully not too calloused, but a lot of the things that was created, just the chaos of war brought on, you know, I haven't had to struggle too much about that.
Okay.
And
I think I asked you the other night when we were Thursday night group about this topic,
yeah,
because some of these guys that take the ultimate path out, you know, suicide, some of those guys, that's what they wrestle with is, yeah, is the separation from God and what they had to do in combat or not have to do in combat. Or for me, it was, I didn't have a problem with that. And that's what scared me when yeah, I came home is like, is there something wrong?
I think more about that.
Yeah. I think more
not
about
having
that,
any
yeah, exactly,
thoughts or guilt dealing with like, so many okay? guys that do.
Yeah. Because I no doubt in my mind that if a threat presented itself in this room right now, that I could take care of it. And
yeah, that's why I have my back to the door.
Yeah.
Because I feel I've never felt safe.
So what I'm saying is wrestling with that,
yeah,
that part of it. Am I worthy of God's love? Because I don't feel that remorse or that conviction,
yeah,
for that. That's a lot of that I end up talking to guys about because, you know, am I a psychopath? You know,
yeah.
Like on a kind of more clinical sense, like moral injury is really just what we're talking about,
yeah,
and how to diagnose moral injury or how to help moral injury. Like that's always the battle that the VA has. Well, yeah, you won't see moral injury as a disability benefit because who's to say which morals we're going against? Who's to say what morals we're, you know, looking at as a generalized, is it good, is it bad? So it usually takes on a lot of the same symptoms as post-traumatic stress,
yeah,
and it gets wrapped up in post-traumatic stress. But whenever we have moral injury groups, the whole conversation is about shame and guilt, yeah, and forgiveness is really the ultimate, you know, answer to it all. And we'll go through different scripture and we'll look at control. If you actually feel like you were in control, survivor's guilt is,
yeah,
is one where you feel like if I would have done something different, this wouldn't have happened the way that it did, and how to release a lot of that. And there's no real simple answer to it. I think in a world that loves quick, easy answers, this one is really, really difficult.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the reasons, like very early when we all started meeting, I wanted to bring up David's Mighty Men and then send you guys that document is I want you to go, hey, this is a man after God's own heart who killed thousands of people with his hands, not with a rifle,
right,
you know, 400 yards away, like with his hands. And then his mighty men, they were stacking bodies. I mean, they were, and God loved these men and pulled these men close. And so one of the ways I've tried to help guys I've met who struggle with that is just to go, if God's calling David a man after his own heart, and David's a killer, man. I mean, he's who you want in the trench with you.
Yeah.
Then I think you're okay. I mean, I just think the Lord can forgive. I think the Lord has a category for war that's different than category for me today in Copper Canyon as I'm, you know, some guy cuts me off on
right,
the street or,
right,
or whatever, right? I want to talk a little bit about maybe misconceptions around veterans now. Here's what's great. We haven't said this. All three of these brothers run nonprofits for veterans. They're very much in this space to different degrees. Casey's full-time. You used to be full-time. I think PJ's probably eventually will be full-time, but they all have ministries where they're walking with and trying to be used by God as healers for veterans who are disoriented or trying to find their way or trying to reacquire purpose.
And whatever it looks like.
Whatever it looks like. Whatever, it could be moral injury. It could be, I mean, it could be any of these things. It's not monolithic. It's you got one, you got one. And so anything like if like either misconceptions or if a veteran's watching this and you're saying something that makes them go, oh my God, that's me.
Yeah.
What would counsel those brothers or sisters right
yeah,
now?
Yeah. I'll pop in real quick with this. And it's almost something that I want to be a misconception. I would love for this to be a misconception. And that's kind of speaking towards the self-identity of the veteran, that you don't have to be the rough, the quick to anger, the, violent, disgruntled veteran that's stereotypical, go to the VFW and complain about your problems and
drink.
You don't have to be that.
Yeah.
And there's something very powerful. Jordan Peterson, all these people talk about having the capacity of violence and knowing that discernment and the tact on when and when not to use it, how important that is and how much more powerful that is. And I think just if you can kind of put down some of those walls of, I have to be this because this is how I was trained.
Yeah.
Well, you're also trained in tact. You're also trained when and when not to use things and to harness that anger.
That's good.
And to use it and to do that on a veteran side, to be, I don't know, less quick to express yourself.
Yeah.
I think I was very, very quick to aggression. I was very quick to anger. I was very quick to criticize. Yeah. That was a big thing in my marriage that I didn't realize was a big problem, because in the military, if something needed to be done differently, you wanted them to know because people's lives were at stake. In my civilian life, if there's something my wife could do better, I can hold that inside.
Nobody's life sits.
No one's life is at stake. Mine might be if I let that slide.
Maybe yours.
Yeah.
So sense of urgency.
Having that discernment to know when it's right to turn it on, when it's not, when it's actually useful. I think that's the biggest thing. If I'm speaking to a veteran, that's the one thing I want them to take away.
Yeah. Man, that's good. Anything else there?
I don't want to get on this soapbox because it's one I've been on for about 10 years now, is the word disorder in post-traumatic stress disorder. I think there's a lot of power in the word disorder, because when you take a veteran in particular and you tell him that he has a disorder now and that he's not mission ready and he's not ready to do his job, I think that's what sucks a lot of life out of these veterans. Is we call it, you haven't heard the word disorder until I just brought it up, because he said post-traumatic stress, he said whatever. I had a whole campaign called Dropping the D from post-traumatic stress, because I think I would say it's more than 60 to 70% of the guy's problem is telling him that he has a disorder.
Yeah, a lot of guys get hung up on that.
And you tell the guy that he's not mission capable anymore, man. That's just, if that's his only purpose was that mission, and you just told him that he has a disorder, that he's not mission capable anymore, then you talk about winning the sales all the time. That just knocks the sale right off the boat.
Sure.
So I think if the culture of, especially now, boxing something in, you can get PTSD from a dog attack.
Yeah.
Or a rape. Or I think there's a little difference between post-traumatic stress and post-traumatic stress disorder. I really don't like the word disorder. I think post-traumatic stress injury is more to me, because you can rehab an injury.
Yeah.
You may never, ever be the same again, but it's not a disorder. Yeah. Disorder to me is a finality. Like, it's going to be with you for the rest of your life. Here, mm-hmm. Here's 22 prescription meds like they gave me when I first got post-traumatic stress as part of my diagnosis. So it was post-traumatic stress with extreme depression is what they told me. And it's a disorder. So therefore, I mean, it's a death sentence to these veterans sometimes. And literally they'll take it as a death sentence. And they're like, hey man, I got this disorder now that I didn't have before, and there's no getting over it.
Yeah, it's a good word. Anything from you?
And I like to tell, just we capture a lot of conversations, and just telling guys like, hey, you're not special, man.
Yeah,
like whatever you're dealing with, a lot of times like our alpha kind of comes out, and oh man, I'm dealing with this, and it's such a big deal. Like it's not.
Yeah,
everybody's doing the same thing, and the quicker you plug in and find community, whether it's in the church, the VFW, wherever it is, the quicker you find that community, the quicker you'll be able to unload that. And whether it's your wife or your religion or, you know, your work, we're all dealing with the same stuff.
Yeah, it's the lie, I think the most consistent lie of the enemy. And you guys know this, even I would guess in regards to military tactics. I mean, if you can isolate a guy,
100%.
He's easy to pick off.
Right.
Like that's animalistic, man. I mean, you just watch National Geographic. That lion's looking for what?
One.
Not the group. He's looking for the one off. And so the biggest lie, I think, in faith even, is that nobody's going through this but me.
Right.
Because if you'll believe that lie, you will pull back.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then once you pull back, you're actually super vulnerable to a thousand, you know.
Well, it's crazy how disasters. Much we do it to ourselves.
Well, it's always self.
It's always self-inflicted. And it's always, I try to teach veterans, is like, hey, are you holding a magnifying glass? Are you holding the magnifying glass on what you're focusing on right now? You know?
Yeah.
Are you holding the magnifying glass?
Yeah. I like to always say, you control your thoughts. You can choose what you're thinking about and fixating on. So you like stop navel gazing,
right?
You know, get your eyes up.
The biggest thing for me is just here recently is my capability of handing something to God.
Yeah.
You know, that's the biggest thing that I will start talking to veterans now about is, hey man, just why are you carrying that? Yeah. Take that rucksack off and gotta, you know, it's okay to not hump that ruck the next 12 miles by yourself. God will pick it up. It'll be okay. You're still a man.
Yeah.
You know, you're still capable of carrying that ruck. It's just, you know, it's okay for your feet to hurt.
Yeah.
I just had that conversation with a veteran this past week, and he said that he kind of fell off his faith like 5 years ago or so. And I said, that's really what has brought me the most joy in the past 2 years is my walk with God. I kind of started walking through what that looked like for me. And I mentioned, you know, letting things go, giving things to God. And it's a term that you hear all the time. I know you've asked me about that and what that meant personally in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, so you just, you know, give it to God and then you just sit back and hope it happens. I said, no, the word that comes to mind is intentional. You have to continue to be intentional. A big prayer over my life was I want to be, for this year, I want more godly men around me, and I can't just give that to God and then go sit back in my house and hope PJ comes knock on my door one day. I have to be intentional about getting out there, saying yes to more things, letting God open doors, but I have to be out there to actually to walk through.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
sure. Absolutely.
I think the last couple of months during our Bible study, that's really when that's really starting to show me. Like, we are called to be together. And we knew that in the military and the feeling that we'll never get that again, but we can, you know, just in a different direction.
Yeah, absolutely. There have been two things on Thursday night that I've thought, oh man, that was so helpful for me to know. One was kind of the verbiage shifting from thank you for your service to welcome home. Where we were talking like this idea that really thank you for your service. Most veterans didn't put their life on the line for the mom at Target.
Right.
You know, they did it for their brothers. They did it for this wiring that God gave them to long to serve and sacrifice themselves. So the verbiage, I forgot, I think it was Will that was saying this, but that idea of thank you for your service is great, but really what a brother needs to hear is, hey, welcome home, man.
Right.
Welcome home. Say a little bit about that.
We lost a lot of Vietnam veterans because of that. You know, World War One, World War Two came through, and you know, the greatest generation was after World War Two. All those guys came, but they came back with open arms. Hey, they were heroes. Yeah. You know, they went back to their communities and were able to get jobs and build businesses and build schools and churches and all that stuff. But Vietnam, it was, those guys were yanked. Like, you know, teachers in Louisiana that were a science teacher was number three on the draft. These guys, we all volunteered sitting at this table. We all volunteered. We knew what we were getting into, basically knew what we were getting into. Those guys that got yanked into it didn't want that. So therefore, when they came home, and then when they come home, they're all baby killers and being spit on. And so your service was something that you hid back then. Well, now you can't, you know, walk through the mall without seeing a, you know, a Vietnam veteran hat or those guys are starting to get some of the love now that we didn't give them when they came back. Well, with this generation of combat or warriors coming back, it's a little different. They're, you know, we're back to that, thank you for your service. And we always got to say, you know, and I, harsh reminder, man, we didn't fight. We weren't in Iraq for you.
Yeah.
We weren't. I was in Iraq for that guy and that guy and the guy next to me and blah, blah, blah. So when I go out and speak, I try to remind people, it's like, hey, man, just be somebody that was worth dying for. You know, we all got buddies that didn't make it back or whatever, but be somebody that his death is not in vain because you're worth fighting for.
Yeah.
Right now, we're fighting that right now is just some people out here just like, I walk down the street and I'm like, man, what did I serve for?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But thanking someone for their service is awesome. Welcoming them home is a bigger part because it's all about community, man.
Yeah.
The community has to put their arms around these guys and let them know, hey, we're glad that you're home. You know, help us build this church, help us build the school.
Yeah.
That's what's
big. Yeah. And I've always looked at it like you said, thank you for your service. It's so great. It's great if people say it. For me, it can be a little transactional, which is fine. There's times when transactional is just fine. If somebody sees me on public and they thank me for my service, great. I'll take it. It's transactional. What I love to see is instead of thank you for your service, someone saying, tell me about your service.
Yeah.
Now, again, that's way more relational. Yeah. So there's time and place for it. I don't want to tell a guy about my service at Walmart while I'm getting groceries, but in the right setting, like, tell me about your service. Cause that gives me a chance to then explain kind of what I've been through, what I've seen, how it affected me to now. And that it comes from a place, I think, more of care than just a blanket thank you for your service. So I'm always trying to get as relational as possible when the time is right.
The other thing that I like, and maybe it was Tribe, the book I read, but he said, hey, what they need when they come up, they need jobs.
100%.
Like good jobs.
Yeah.
And they've got skills, they've got discipline, they've got, so like, you know, thanking a guy for his service and having him come back to a community where there's not meaningful work to aim his discipline and seeking that newfound purpose, that's a tough sell. And so anything there that you guys want to talk about, just the power of that?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely power in that. I think a lot of that, I mean, when we're mentoring or coaching veterans on that, and it's just seeing all the skills, the leadership that you have, all the different traits that you've had in the military, and just thinking, how does that translate to different jobs that you may not even be looking at?
Yeah.
And we hear that all the time. Like I kicked in doors and shot guns for the past 10 years. What does that translate to? And then it's like, well, did you run a team? Did you have any leadership? Did you have different, you know, critical thinking, problem solving, all those things that look really great on a resume and do translate to a multitude of jobs. So it's just kind of reframing their service to be like, all right, what skills can you then lead over, and how do you problem solve in the veteran side? How do you, create change in the problem side or in the veteran side? Mm-hmm. So that's just kind of just reframing for the veterans.
Okay. I love it. Anything else or?
No, just that call, just that call to action. Yeah. Let's take those words
if guys are, they own businesses and they're watching this or they've got opportunities.
Yeah, for sure. We deal with a ton of vets. I mean, I do a few a week that just, hey, I'm out, I'm stale, I don't have anything going on, I've been filling out resumes. Like there's a lot of good,
I would just say, guys, grab the veterans that are in your family, and you know, everybody, we're 2% of the population, I think is what it says. But everybody you ask, oh, my uncle served and blah, blah, blah. Just grab those guys, talk to them. I mean, I'm not walking up and going, hey, how many people did you kill you? You know, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, hey, you know, just checking on you. I know Veterans Day is right down the road. The problem with veterans is we live by anniversaries.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of those guys get stuck in, man, 3 months, my best friend was killed in Iraq.
Yeah.
Well, 2 weeks, man. We got to stop living by anniversaries.
Okay.
And that's one thing that I preach to these guys is, especially the ones that are contemplating suicides, man, what anniversary are you stuck on right now to get you there? Because that's where the depression comes in, is thinking about, hey, we kicked in, Fallujah kicked off on this day, blah, 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 and it's coming up. And 6 months out of the year, man, right when it gets around Christmas time, they don't want to be around their family at Christmas. This is, you know what's coming. You know that veteran's going to have to start reaching out to that guy. Hey, man, I know.
Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
I know I set reminders on what guys to call on what days.
Yeah, that's good.
Because you know they're going to be getting spun up.
Yeah. But is getting those guys off that anniversary is that way, man, yesterday, I didn't realize it was yesterday that my best friend was killed. That's where I want to get those guys to, that they forget about it. Not to the point where you got to forget about your buddy, but
no,
it's not dictating your life. And biggest thing with family with me is me and my wife is I'll start, you know, we get into an argument. I'm full bore. Like I'm being attacked, blah, blah, blah. And I'm drenched afterwards. And she's like, why are you, it's fight or flight and I'm fighting. And so you got to understand those cues in these veterans. And here's another thing. If I didn't tell you I was a veteran, I mean, I probably looked the part, but if I didn't tell you, I'm not going to walk up and say, hey, I'm a veteran. That's not how I introduced myself. So
most guys don't.
Most guys don't.
Yeah.
The spouses most of the time going, hey, he was a combat vet. You might know what? It's a warning at that point.
Yeah.
I would love for you to talk a little bit about really in how your relationship with Jesus has begun to heal and move and reintegrate. Casey, we've talked a lot about kind of how your really salvation was the thing that started to reconnect head and heart. So I'd love to just kind of brief, like, here's how Jesus has helped me heal, has renewed purpose, has those kinds of.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start just because mine is so raw, so new that it's, I mean, the control was the biggest thing for me. I mentioned already the transition looked smooth and all these things that I was in control of those things, or at least I thought I
felt what,
felt like it was. Like I got a job, I was able to get the house, like I'm in control. I don't need anybody else. And then when you start, the control for yourself is fine. I can control what I think, I can control what I do. But when that control starts to bleed over and now I'm trying to control relationships, I'm trying to control outcomes of different events, I'm trying to control the way people think, that's, I have no control of that. And then it just gets so exhausting. And I was at that point in my life where on the surface, again, everything looked great. You know, great marriage, kids, everything, the job. But inside I was just struggling and so exhausted. And it was like, I don't even know if there's a pinpoint moment that I can say like, hey, I just gave myself to God. It was just, I felt this release. I felt this weight that was lifted off of me. And by doing that, as I mentioned before, I'm not just sitting back, but I'm looking for invitations to allow him into my life and allow me to grow closer to God. And I looked at it kind of like, and I had this conversation with Will yesterday, the reframing my relationship with God. And probably before, I would always look at him just as the authority figure.
Yeah.
Just as someone that will, you know, smack my wrist if I'm doing something bad. And I think for many veterans, we're kind of over authority. We don't seek authority necessarily anymore. And I think that's where God was for me. It was just this authority, the King of Kings. And then when Will and I were talking about kind of the different, you know, roles that he could play and a father, and I look at the relationship of a father, of there is authority there and there's fear there. But then the more that I've been able to grow and see my father as a peer and see him as, all right, you have been through you've felt these things that I've been feeling. You've walked this life before. And then I can really be vulnerable with him and connect with him. And same with God, that I can talk to God in a way now where I'm vulnerable. I'm open. I'll bring everything to the table because I'm not some, probably in the past, I was like, oh, I'll just deal with this on my own. Yeah. God doesn't need to know about this just yet. But now to really want to bring that to him, because I know it's in good hands if I do bring it to him. I know I can release that and that he works wonders way more than I could ever conceive myself to work. So I think just really fully embracing that and reframing my relationship with God has just led to just excitement. And I hope that it comes off as excitement with anybody I talk to, that I really am excited about this relationship and this journey. And I just want to be a light for other veterans that are kind of in that darkness. Yeah. And if that's my way to disciple to them, then yeah, so be it.
I love it.
Yeah. So I wrote a blog not too long ago called Chasing my Headstone.
Okay.
It was talking about my whole life. I spent my whole life chasing that headstone. And now what I really want is what's written on it.
Yeah.
That's become my purpose, is what's written on that headstone. So for me, I'm kind of new in this faith thing too. Praying for me has always been the difficult part, and giving stuff to God. But, you know, I just picture Jesus holding me, being a safe spot, and learning to hand him stuff that I'm worrying about has been my biggest. I just bought a house, man. I handed that whole thing over to him. He just went right on with it. So, this milestones like that I can look back and go, man, that's God. That was God. And now I'm starting to get those cues now when I'm talking to myself in my head, and I just peace out. That's God. You know, just recognizing those God moments, you know, and that it's everything. Like, as soon as you wake up, he's already there. And, you know, just hand that to him. That's
it's kind of mind-blowing to think about, though. I'm kind of with Casey on the control end. Yeah. But then that same experience, like, get out of the Marine Corps.
Once you give it away, man.
Build a business, run everything for years, 30-plus people you're in charge of. In a season now where we've sold that, stepping back, looking at what's next, and really how to give up that control. And a lot of guys, you know, deal with the same thing. It's like, it's
terrifying to give it up.
You know, it's wow. You know, what are we really doing? Hand that over. Oh, that sounds good, but what is that? What do you even mean right now? Like, that's crazy.
I just don't understand why we quit holding each other accountable when we get out.
Yeah.
We quit. It's like we almost put baby gloves on, and, you know.
Well, with TRG, like, that's our nonprofit. We always preach, you know, getting up, getting active, getting outdoors, and creating community. So, like, our whole mission is getting guys like ourselves that haven't been connected in the ways we should, you know, get them up, get them off the couch, get them outdoors. I don't know what it is, but there's something about getting like-minded people so outside. True. You know, doing these experiences, just facilitating conversations. There's something to it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's whether we're TRG or we're sitting in our small group, it's the same model.
Yeah.
You know.
So what is there a way, if, and I want all both of you to do it too, guys watching this right now, TRG, what's that? Is there a website or some place a guy can go to look at what TRG is?
Yes, definitely. We have social media accounts. We got a website. We can probably drop the link on this.
We'll put it all in the show notes.
But we're all about getting our communities networked. We're a local nonprofit here in North Texas, just over 4 years kind of in the making. Our outreach is via adventure trips. So we do 8 trips a year, and that's hunting, hiking, fishing, exploration. Just about building that community. And once we get done, we have an alumni kind of end of things that keeps us all plugged in. We'd love for anybody and everybody to check us out. And if you're in the North Texas area, we'd love to get connected with you and build that community. We work a lot with Casey because we are event driven. So we have an event every few months.
Yeah.
So when people come in, we utilize his group as kind of a landing place, like a hub.
Yeah.
And then vice versa. You know, we work off each other.
All right.
I love that. Yeah.
I love that. Casey, talk a little bit about the hub.
Yeah, the hub. So the Military Veteran Peer Network. So that's the Texas-wide organization. So it's under the Texas Veterans Commission. I'm the coordinator for all of Denton County, myself and Becca Hobby. And so if they want to reach us, they can go to dencountymvpn.org is our website. But we have 5 pillars that we run our organization out of. And our mission, very, very simple. Facilitate connection in the veteran community. And connection looks different for everyone. Yeah. So one veteran might come to us liking the outdoors. Great. We've got a hiking program. We've got a fly fishing program. We can utilize PJ and all the different things that they're going on, the hunting trips, the fishing trips. other veterans might find connection through art. So we have therapeutic art groups at our veteran center. Really, whatever connection looks like for that person, crocheting, if it's just getting together, sitting around a table and having coffee, we can do whatever it looks like for them. We're in that position where we just facilitate it, and we use collaboration is key. So we'll use any kind of other veteran organization that already has the logistics. They're doing very good work for the veterans, so we'll utilize them. And it's their shared partnership.
Yeah.
So if they're taking veterans out fly fishing, that's usually all they're doing is fly fishing. That's all the capacity they have to do is fly fish. But if those conversations are had and there's marital issues that are brought up, or somebody needs help with their disability benefits, they can turn around and send them back to us at the hub, and we can help them with all those concerns that they have, and just really organically build that community and just kind of force multiply
They have some counseling services at Casey's place, which has been great, because we'll kick the door down at night, 3 a.m. on the mountain somewhere. You know, we'll have a conversation that'll need some follow-up.
Yeah.
So it's great to be able to loop back and plug these guys in. And
yeah, Veterans Point. Veterans Point is our local veteran networking center that I'd run. It's on a beautiful equestrian therapy ranch, so it's real peaceful. We didn't want to make it clinical or administrative, just a comfortable place for veterans to bring their families. And Gallant Few, another veteran organization, does free counseling out of Veterans Point. So whenever they do need, I love peer support. That's the heart of what we do, but there are those concerns that need that additional clinical side.
Yeah.
So we give that to the professionals to do it.
Love
I think
that.
One thing that we've really discovered too is we're trying to do like a little culture shift, or a big culture shift. I know Zach and I have talked about it before. Casey and I, we deal with it a lot. If I invite some guys out on a trip, like, I'm good, man. You know, somebody else is more deserving. We really want to be a physical thank you for your service. You know, who you are, what you've done, or what you're currently doing. There doesn't need to be anything wrong with you.
Yeah.
You know, in the past, a lot of these big, great organizations, you know, hey, you're wounded, you know, you need a hand, you know, like, hey, everybody needs a hand. If you're doing good, outstanding.
Yeah,
great. If you need a help, great. Let's come alongside. Let's do life for a little bit. So that's one thing that's really important to us.
Yeah. And that's just being intentional about how we run programs, how we run groups. We've kind of gotten away from even the idea of like AA, nothing against them. They're great at what they do. But getting people around a table that are all sharing the same concern, and that can kind of start to become an identity.
Yeah.
And you feel like, all right, I am an alcoholic now. That's all I am. But we get the person struggling with substance use around somebody else that's struggling with marital issues, around somebody else that's, you know, been struggling trying to find employment. And then they feel like, I can empower that person. Like, I may be going through alcoholism, but I have a great marriage and I can share some of that with that person who's struggling. So getting them, not just people that are going through it, that are hit rock bottom, but get the veterans that are doing well, the business owners, the ones that are very successful.
For sure.
Yeah, bring them together and let them learn from each other. That's really what community is learning from the people around you.
I think that's such a needed word, where praise God you're doing good, then get in here and help.
Exactly.
You know, great. Right. Come on this, you know, trip and see what doors might open for you to, you know,
pour into somebody else.
Yeah.
So I started Casualties of War in 2016. I was on 22 prescription meds that the VA put me on, and was in a bad spot and noticed that some guys around me were. So casualtiesofwar.net, you can find them on the internet. We have a nonprofit hub in Houston now. I kicked it off to team Philip Went and Stephanie Gavin down in Houston, and they kill it every year. We basically go find these nonprofits, because the biggest thing for a nonprofit is funds. And I got tired of running, selling t-shirts and bracelets and asking for donations to, and never being able to get past putting the event on. Mm. So what we do is we go and find these nonprofits like TRG and Casey's nonprofit, and we validate those programs and say, all right, they're actually helping the veteran community. So then we will go hold an event to raise funds for those nonprofits. So we if it's an equestrian nonprofit or whatever it is, we hold two crawfish bowls a year, not this weekend, but the next weekend, I guess it's April 26th, I want to say. Okay. Houston, they're having the Crawdads for America is what we call it. We did 10,000 pounds of crawfish last year. They're scheduled to do just that many this year. It's a lot of mud bugs.
It's a lot,
but we also have Barbecue for America as well. It's a sanctioned event. So we do those things to raise money for the local nonprofits because we're real big on the community. I don't think a nonprofit should be giving money to in Texas and in North Texas, raising money for somewhere in West Virginia.
Yeah.
I think it needs to be staying here in North Texas. So we have chapters all over the United States, New Mexico chapter, California chapter. I kind of wanted to structure it because the VFWs were kind of dying.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to, I would say nobody. Most guys don't want to go and sit in a VFW smoke field playing dominoes and crapping about their wife and kids. So we kind of wanted to start chapters in each, and that's what we did. So, also have Tattered Flag Project, which is a 501c4. The Tattered Flag Project was built to lobby Congress. It's kind of hard for a 501c3 to jump up in front of Congress and change the laws that help veterans. So we started a Tattered Flag Project and made it a 501c4. We've changed a bunch of laws in Oklahoma and Texas. Some hunting laws for veterans. You know, now you can leave Texas and go into Oklahoma if you're a veteran. You don't have to pay the state hunting tax if you're from out of state. That was one of the things that we changed. So there's a lot of nonprofits if you just look in your area, but when you touched on if these employers would reach out to these local nonprofits.
Yeah.
And instead of putting something on ZipRecruiter and it saying you have to have a 4-year degree in business management, I don't have a 4-year degree, but I guarantee I can run your business better than you probably can. So most veterans are like that. And if you just reach those guys and stop looking at that master's degree, because you got to think these guys were in the military in their prime when they should have been going to college. They don't have that 4-year degree. They may have an associate's degree, and that's because they got through the first 2 years of it, and they're like, I'm done with this college stuff. But they're right here. They go to church with you. They walk in the grocery store with you. Talk to them, find out what they got going on, and latch onto those guys. You don't have to be a veteran to help a veteran.
Yeah, that's good. Here's how I kind of always end these episodes. Like the feedback when I started doing this podcast was, somebody would either write on the YouTube comments or they would DM me or send an email in and just say something like, man, I was on the treadmill. I was in my car. It was 3 a.m. and I couldn't sleep. And so I got up and this popped up on my feed and, you know, my whole family's asleep and I'm in my office with headphones on. And it was in that moment. That the Lord landed on me or convicted me or encouraged me and so one of the things I started doing because that was so consistently the feedback is like in all reality, that's happening right now. Like there's the mom of a veteran, the wife of a veteran, and they're at the gym and they've got their headphones on and they're listening to our conversation. They're in their car on a road trip or they work in their car and they're listening to us have this conversation. If you could speak to them directly in regards to encouragement for physical, spiritual, emotional healing, specifically maybe as it relates to Jesus, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that. How would you encourage them? And some of them, I know they're listening right now because their mom sent them this podcast or their wife sent them the podcast. Or a friend was like, hey, man, I think this might be helpful. And praise God for people who, like, don't be upset by that. It means they love you. They care about you. And they thought maybe there was something in, you know, us four morons sitting around chopping it up that might help you. And so if you could just speak directly to the veteran right now or the loved one of a veteran in regards to just encouraging them towards further healing, what would it be?
Yeah. My one word, and it's a word that I've been just stuck on, is just intentional.
Yeah.
Be intentional in everything that you do, whether it's your physical, like you have to be intentional. You have to get yourself out to the gym. You have to go do the things that you want to do to better yourself. But really, more on the spiritual level, you have to be intentional with every door that you want open. You have to be there to walk through it if it opens for you. So spouses need to be intentional about finding other spouses. Find a community that understands what you're going through. you know, Becca Hobby talks about that all the time to other spouses. She's great. And she'll tell them just from a place like she was in so many different groups with all these other women, and they're all walking with the Lord, and they're great groups, great women, but she wasn't able to connect with them because none of them were spouses of veterans. So she had to be intentional to go find them. Yeah. Go find other veteran spouses. And once she sat down with them, like something clicks and they're able to speak in a certain language in a certain way, that just instant community with those women. And same with the veterans. Be intentional. Like Zach was saying, go on, just look up local veteran organizations around you. If you can't find one, hit one of us up.
Especially if you're doing good, even if you're doing good.
Exactly. If you're doing good, be intentional to pour into others who aren't doing as well as you. Like, we hear it all the time. I'm just that lack of purpose. Guys that get out and get 100% disabled, and now they don't have to work, and they're just sitting on their hands. And it's like, you have a story, you have a testimony, and you can help so many other people, but you have to be intentional to get out there to spread that.
Yeah.
So find a group of people, find community, and get out there and see where that purpose leads you.
I love it.
I think my challenge is just be to plug in.
Yeah.
You know, that can be so many different directions. You know, if you're a spouse, plug in. Spouses deal with a lot, you know, from us. If that's plugging into a church group, or if that's plugging into, you know, some guys, we're called to plug in. Over the last couple of months, I'm just really learning on the religion side of things. You know, you need guys to carry you, to kind of pull you up. Sometimes, you know, you can only do so much, you know, yourself. So one thing we always challenge is just plug in, create that accountability, and that'll carry you when you can't really do it yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's good.
I would just say a lot of it is, I was trying to think of one word thing to say, but you guys kind of knocked it
just
out.
Just do it your style.
But with military guys, field manuals are the, especially with Marine Corps, field manuals, they got a field manual for building the toilet outside.
You know so much about us.
Yeah,
100%. Like, you want BS.
But here's the deal.
I'm proud that we haven't devolved into that yet.
We'll save it for tonight. I'm keeping it easy.
We'll save it for tonight.
Yeah, that's for tonight's conversation.
I tell all my Marine guys is, hey, what field manual covers that?
Yeah.
Because last thing I checked, there wasn't a field manual on desertion.
Yeah.
And when you hit a veteran in the knees like that, that's usually what brings them out. So keeping those veterans accountable, but with the VA right now, is I don't want our veterans falling into a welfare state, and that's where we are in this nation. Is our veterans, they want to throw pills at them, and they want them staying home, and you know, if they're staying home and not putting on a black trench coat and shooting up a mall somewhere. So you don't have to be on 22 prescription meds. You know, they're just checking boxes when they go in there. So if that's your option, you go the VA and say, hey, I want to get help for post-traumatic stress, and they go, hey, We got these pills. Just know that there's other options out there. Don't get stuck in the pill mill. But the greatest thing that God gave us was he gave us a field manual.
Yeah.
It's called the Bible.
Yeah.
And for me, everything that you're going through is in there.
Yeah.
Just find it in the field manual.
Yeah.
And so that would be my biggest thing, is just embracing Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, and know that He's right there. You know, you're not alone. You have a team with you, whether you know it or not. You just have to recognize it and get plugged, he said, get plugged back into it.
Man, thank you for dialing in to this episode of The Overcomers. Just if I could close out our time. What we know is you cannot heal in isolation. No one can. No one can heal in isolation. There is no one-man team that can put himself back together. And this is a gift. This is the gift of community. And so if somebody sent you this, or you're watching this, and maybe you're not even a veteran, and you find yourself just completely isolated right now, and especially maybe if you're isolated because you've believed the lie that no one's struggling like you, man, I would encourage you. I think you'll be shocked at how many people, if you're just vulnerable about that and a safe place to be vulnerable, would say, yeah, me too. So I do believe the Lord wants to heal in the deepest places possible, regardless of what the issue is. I think Christian history and the Bible shows us God's committed to that. And so I want to invite you to move towards the person and work of Jesus Christ. I don't care what you've done. The Bible is a really grimy book. Like Jesus came to save us while we were at our worst. That's what the Apostle Paul said. It was while you were in the most shameful state, in the most gross state, in the most unthinkable state, that Christ died for you. And so if you move towards him and you move towards his people, I think there's great healing to be had. The other thing I just like, you don't have to be a veteran or active duty for that to be true. That's true for all of us. I do think there are some special components for our veterans in this area. And pray, man, listen, I'm commending these nonprofits to you. I'm not putting people in front of you who are going to fleece you. I mean, these are real men who love the Lord, who are walking with guys who have been broken by the trauma of war or haven't been broken by the trauma of war and are willing to give in to those who have. And so whether you're healthy or unhealthy, or you're just looking for a place to support veterans, man, I'm just laying these three brothers and their nonprofits in front of you. And so thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Overcomers. Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning in to The Overcomers. I just pray your heart is always encouraged in the Lord. Really, the ministry I feel God's called me to in this season is to be one that's encouraging you, telling you the Lord sees you, reminding you of the opportunities that we have as the people of God in this day. And so the Overcomers podcast is one of the ways I do that. Another way is that I'm sending out a monthly newsletter. And in that, I've got a little audio link for kind of things I'm thinking about and wrestling through that I'm not necessarily preaching on. And so in the show notes is a link where you can go and sign up for that monthly email. And so, man, if The Overcomers is encouraging you, I would encourage you then to click on that link, sign up for the newsletter. And it's a way for me to further encourage you as you seek to live as overcomers in this current moment.